Hello, my name is Sam. This is a series best listened to from the beginning. For a quick recap, our protagonist has met an old man. They sit and chat over a cup of coffee, and after he leaves, she realizes he has scratched a very interesting story into the lines of her legal pad. She reads it and discovers it is the rich tale of an ancient village. Please enjoy The Scribbling Man.
Your only chance for success is to attack with all your men during the night of our festival, just after the great feast. They will be full and lazy and very slow to defend. You must be patient to wait for the right time, but it will guarantee success. To the boy's horror, these words were coming from the voice he recognized.
It was the chief's son, the oldest boy and youngest man of the village, and the finest gourd player. To prove his stunned ears were not mistaken, his eyes insisted on seeing. As sure as the moon was high, the chief's eldest son was sitting across a campfire from a man who looked to be from their nearest neighboring tribe. All the villagers were forbidden to ever contact or converse with them. Doing so was punishable by many awful things, and maybe even death, if the chief was in a temper. Although it had never happened in the boy's lifetime. Too surprised to even make a peep, the boy slowly backed down the boulder he had climbed for the better vantage point. There was nothing he could do now that would turn out in a favorable light for his survival, even though he was beyond enraged at this betrayal. Trying to remember how it felt bounding across the plains of his dreams, he sprinted off in the direction of his home, fast and silent as a cheetah, to report this to his chief. Despite his reputation as a meanderer, when put to it, the boy could take a direct route. Swerving only for trees and pools of water, he padded briskly across the plain until he found the hut of his chief. But his chief was not there. At a loss, he staggered out of the hut. On the other side of the village, the sound of his mother's voice chastising his sister snapped him out of his daze. He proceeded with tenderness as his head began to hurt after the run back to the village. He walked into his hut just as his mother was raising her stirring spoon high in the air in preparation to bring it down with corporal force on the backside of his prostrate sister. "Mama, wait, I'm here," he said from the door. Both mother and sister screamed, startled, and turned to him with relief and then concern on their faces.
"My baby, what happened to your head?"
"I fell and hit a rock, and when I opened my eyes again, it was dark," the boy replied meekly. His mother looked at his sister with eyes that might have started fires in the rainy season. "I will deal with you tomorrow. Now go to bed." She said this with full knowledge of how much more effective a postponed mystery punishment could be on imaginative and guilty children. "Where's the chief?" the boy asked his mother, as his mother made their way across the hut to moisten a cloth. "Why do you need to see the chief?" she asked as she delicately applied the cloth to the boy's forehead. Not sure if he wanted to start blabbing the story to his mother. After all, wasn't he always taught to leave men's business for the men and women's business for the women? He said, "I saw a herd of gazelle he could hunt." He tried to stay casual during the lie. "Sweet boy, he is off hunting that herd, you must have seen. He should be back after the sun rises and the older children return with water." The boy stifled his surprise at the convenience of his cover-up and easily disguised it as a reaction to his bruise and cut being cleaned. Nothing to be done now, he decided to try and console his sister before he fell asleep. He would wake up as early as he could to climb the highest tree and spy the return of the chief. He hoped to meet him before he reached the village. It was his only chance for some privacy. His sister pretended very well to be asleep. But the occasional sob broke through to destroy her ruse. He let her be and fell asleep, hoping to dream of the great bird again. Dawn came early, dazzling his eyes and ears. Still fuzzy from his skull thumping, he slowly got up and squinted outside, holding his head. Birds chirped, kids screamed and laughed, and the stirrings of early morning were occurring all over the village. The boy climbed the highest tree and sat perched there until he saw what he hoped was the chief, carrying the carcass of a gazelle with two other men. He can always tell the chief from a distance. He's of normal height and build, unlike chiefs of the past who are usually the biggest men of the tribe. This chief was unique. He had hair that looked like it was making a fierce attempt to get away from his brain. Despite the fact that most other men and boys of the village tried in vain to emulate the chief's hair, no pitch or poultice could get hair to truly mimic his head-covering chaos. Once spotted, the chief was approached as quickly as the boy could run with his head pounding. "Chief! Chief! I need to talk to you." "Why, little wanderer, do you need to speak with me in such haste?" "I saw something last night you need to know." "All right, if you must, walk by my side and tell me." The boy then related in every detail the scene he saw involving the chief's son and the neighboring tribesmen. The chief chuckled and patted the boy on his shoulder. "Ah, I see. Did you see and hear all this before or after you bumped your head?" "Well, after," the boy replied, puzzled at why the timeline of his injury mattered. "I can see you are not lying, but neither can I believe you. You see, my son would never do such a thing. And also, vicious bumps on the head often make one see things that are not real in a way that seems real enough at the time." "But Chief, I am not making this up." "I did not say you were. The mind is a funny thing when it is injured." "How did you go about bumping your head?"
"Well, I was listening to the musicians practice, and I fell asleep and dreamed of a great bird that squawked at me. I jumped awake and banged my head. Then I opened my eyes, and it was dark."
"A great bird, you say? That seals it. It was the great dream bird of mischief, no doubt laying an egg of trickery in your mind."
"Oh,"
the boy replied wanly. "That is why you do not lie. But for the same reason, I cannot believe the story you tell."
"Oh, but,"
the boy stammered. "Tell me, child, is there anyone else you have told?"
"No, Chief. Men's business is men's, like you always say."
"That's the best thing, for stories like this can cause fear and division in our tribe. Please, speak to no one about it. If I find anything amiss with my son's behavior, I will have you to thank for the premonition," he punctuated with a wink. Somehow, the last bit made the boy feel much less of a fool and much more tight-lipped about what he thought he saw. "Now run along and be a child. Leave the man work to men." The boy trotted off to apologize to his sister, who was long gone collecting water when he got back to his hut. As it happened, under duress, his sister admitted to being preoccupied with the chief's eldest son when the boy slipped from her sight. Consequently, both were punished for this indiscretion. Their punishment was to dig a giant hole in the middle of the village in preparation for the festival. This had never been done before, and it caused quite a stir. But it was upon the chief's request that the hole be dug, so it was done. He explained that there was a new plan he wanted to introduce to the tribe. An impressive display for the women by the tribesmen would take place. But there would be training involved, so more of the festival preparation would need to be done by the women this time. Many women joked, asking how that was different from any previous festival. Those gathered, which was most of the tribe, had a great laugh together, dispelling the last doubts in this very strange request. The days passed, and as the boy's bruise and cut receded, the hole expanded. It was 4 men wide, 8 men long, and almost as deep as a man standing. The boy could not shake the feeling from what he saw that night, so found solace in the fact that the chief's son was very obviously not enjoying his punishment. Even though he trusted the chief to not have told his son about the boy's accusation of betrayal, he felt his skin crawl every time his eyes met the steely glare of the chief's eldest. Probably for no reason more than the boy's temporary wandering causing his sister's eventual admission. Probably. The fallen fruit was gathered and put into the gourd hut. This housed the beginnings of the old men's spirits operations. It was set up like this. Dozens of gourds were hollowed out and cut into the shape of huge bowls, each big enough for at least a couple dozen sweet fruit. One layer of these covered most of the floor, and the rest were stacked on top, so it ended up resembling a well-organized mountain of gourd bottoms. This was the chief's first great idea. The new system of spirit making was far more productive, less wasteful, and less labor-intensive, which won the men over straight away, as well as some of the women. His next great idea was the stretching of animal hide over gourds, or hollowed logs, to make drums that sounded so sweet and rang across the plain like the thunder of the gods, without the foul weather. This won over the musicians, dancers, and children. His third great idea he gave to the hunters, a simple device he called the atlatl, which allowed them to hurl spears with tremendous strength and accuracy. He then taught them all how to make their own out of hardwood or bone. It was so effective, many of the women had become very good at it as well. And now girls returning from fetching water would occasionally come home with prairie game, much to the pride of their families. Filling bellies really wins people over. So even though there was a gaping hole in the middle of the village circle, no one complained. They speculated a great deal instead. The old men figured it was a container for the purpose of brewing their drink. The musicians thought it was going to be a great earth drum that would rattle the plain like the great giant snoring in his sleep. The dancers and children assumed it was there merely to test everyone's leaping abilities. Some women thought maybe it was to be a huge roasting pit, but none of them were right. In addition to the gathering of fallen fruit, many of the children were set to the task of finding as much dried grass and reeds as possible, as long as it was as tall as, or taller than, a man. The older boys and stronger girls were bid to collect the longest sticks and branches they could. Huge piles were made of each, and everyone continued guessing at what the chief possibly could have in mind. It became time for the ripened fruit to be picked off the trees, which meant the festival was extremely near. It seemed to the boy that the son of the chief was growing more and more agitated and shifty-eyed. Never fully rid of his mistrust, the boy began to follow his every move. As he watched, having completed the giant hole to the chief's specifications, his eldest son was put to the task of sharpening a great many spears out of some of the gathered branches. One afternoon, when the eldest son assumed he was alone, he began to sneak off. The boy felt compelled to follow. To his amazement, the eldest led him to the exact same spot behind the boulders from that first night. Without making a sound, the boy climbed up the boulder just as before. Lo and behold, there was a spot of blood from his earlier head wound. "I knew it," he thought to himself. "The chief's son is a liar and a betrayer." He quietly listened as the plans he heard earlier were confirmed when the other tribesmen repeated them for the chief's eldest son. There cannot be any mistakes. I even think there is suspicion on me, so do exactly as I have told you in order to be victorious, the chief's son stated. There was a grumble of what seemed to be assent from the neighboring tribesmen, and they did the traditional handshake of the plains people to end their conversation. I will see you and all your men tomorrow night, the eldest grinned. The boy inched his way around the boulder away from the side the chief's son was walking past to remain undetected and, most importantly, alive.